This comes as Israel continues to carry out strikes inside Gaza, despite the U.S. brokered so-called ceasefire that went into effect in October. To talk more about all of this and more, we're joined by Masab Abu Toha, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Palestinian poet and author, awarded the 2025 Pulitzer Prize for essays published in The New Yorker. His latest poetry book is Forest of Noise. He left Gaza with his family in 2023 after he was jailed and beaten by Israeli forces. Masab, welcome back to Democracy Now! Talk about the state of Gaza, of the place where you lived your life until 2023, where it stands now, as the U.S. and Israel says that the ceasefire is entering its second phase.
Thank you for having me. I want to talk about the place where I grew up in. I was born in a refugee camp in Gaza. There are 8 refugee camps in the Gaza Strip. Israel erased at least 2 of them. And then I grew up in Beit Lahia. And yesterday, Israel murdered a Palestinian woman named Basma Banat, 27 years old, in Beit Lahia, the city that was decimated by the Israeli terrorist attacks. People are still living in the tents. I have family members. I have sisters in Gaza and who are living with their husbands and their children, and they're still living in tents in the streets or near the rubble of their houses. People do not have access to water. People do not have access to healthy food. It's true that some food trucks are entering, but those are not the essential food that people in Gaza need in order to survive the many months of the starvation in the Gaza Strip. There are so many patients, Amy, and I'm sure that you reported on that. There are about 20,000 patients who need urgently to be evacuated, and Israel is allowing a trickle of that number. Among the 20,000, as reported by Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmiya, there are about 4,500 cancer patients, there are 4,500 children, and there are about 10,000 wounded people who need to have complex surgeries. And meanwhile, while on the wait list, more than 3,300 people died while they were in the Gaza Strip waiting for the border crossing, which Israel not only occupied but destroyed. So the situation in Gaza is so horrific. It's still a genocide ongoing since the so-called ceasefire went into effect. Israel killed over 642 people, including 197 children. Amy, that's like killing 10 classroom students in a public school in the United States. And in general, Israel has killed, since the start of the so-called ceasefire, 5 people every day, an average of 5 people every day. As far as it goes to the trucks, if Israel, according to the Gaza Rights Center, Israel allowed only 43% of the trucks that were agreed upon in this so-called ceasefire, and including only 15% of fuel trucks. So the situation is not improving to an extent where people can survive, the ongoing genocide.
Explain how it works when people are trying to leave for medical attention. Al Jazeera is reporting a Palestinian child died on Sunday while waiting for Israel to approve his exit from Gaza for medical treatment amidst an ongoing health care crisis in the enclave, whose medical infrastructure has been destroyed by Israel's genocidal war, Al Jazeera writes. Nadal Abu Rabia's family told Al Jazeera they had medical referral documents approved to receive treatment abroad, but he was left waiting for 14 months to be allowed out of the enclave of 2.3 million Palestinians, most of whom are displaced. If you can explain what's going on, and especially at the Rafah border.
This is so heartbreaking, because the child that you just mentioned, Abu Rabia, he's also from Beit Lahia. So I know members from that family. And Amy, the problem is that these kids, you know, when they die, it's not like they're dying without anyone shouting, you know, and screaming in public that, oh, we need to evacuate this child or that man who has skin disease or has kidney failure or who is a cancer patient. So I don't remember how many times I posted on social media, begging in the entire world on my social media, on X, on Instagram, on Facebook, that this boy, this child, this woman, this mother, this grandfather needs to be evacuated immediately in order to survive. But I don't remember anyone reaching out to me or even reaching out to the family who was begging, you know, to help them evacuate. But it never happened. And that child, I'm sure that 100% many people posted about him that he needs, you know, to be evacuated. And by the way, Amy, an important point is that the stories of people dying in Gaza because they need immediate medical evacuation, it did not start in 2023. There are some cases from 2010, 2015, 2017 of people because the border crossing was closed, because Israel was not giving security clearance to the families to go to the West Bank or some hospitals in Jerusalem. Many people died even before the genocide started in 2023. So this is not a new story for us. But now the numbers have been increased because of the larger number of people who need immediate medical evacuation. And I would like to correct that this is, we should not, I think, call it Rafah border crossing. It's no longer a border. It's a military checkpoint. And if you're following the news and listening to the stories of witnesses and victims, you will hear the stories of families returning to Gaza or leaving, and they have been subjected to harassment and abuse by the Israeli terrorist soldiers in Rafah.
I wanted to get your response, Mossab, to Mike Huckabee's recent comments. The U.S. ambassador to Israel, Arab and Muslim nations are condemning those comments. He was speaking to the right-wing commentator, Tucker Carlson.
But this particular area that we're talking about now, Israel, is a land that God gave through Abraham to a people that he chose. It was a people, a place, and a purpose. We can look at it that way. Christian Zionism, I want to go back because that's where we started.
I'm not going to let you off on this because you have said it three times that God gave this land to this people. And so it is entirely fair for me with respect to ask, what land are you talking about? Because I just read Genesis 15, as I have many times. Mm-hmm. And that land, I think it says, from the Nile to the Euphrates, which is, once again, basically the entire Middle East.
It would be fine if they took it all.
That's the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mossab Abu Toha, your response.
I mean, I was confused as I was. I mean, that interview was really shocking, and not shocking, because this is not the first time I heard him speaking, you know, extremist language and a genocidal language for me. But I mean, maybe as a Palestinian, you know, I sometimes found myself confused. I mean, is this an American ambassador to a country, or is it an official in that country? I mean, the language he was using is a language that even it's more, for me sometimes, it's more extreme than the language you hear from some Israelis who have been occupying our land and killing our people. I mean, sometimes I wonder, you know, if there is something else in the Bible that talk about, you know, justice, about peace. I mean, there is Genesis that they were quoting from about giving our land, the land of my grandparents, to other people. And there is the Amalek. Is there something else in the Bible that you can quote from about mercy and love and justice for the people, for human beings? And I remember, you know, hearing Tucker asking Mike Huckabee about doing DNA, you know, for Jewish people who are living in Israel, who are occupying our land. And I was wondering, why don't we do DNA for everyone on this earth, you know, to prove that we are all the creatures of God? We are all the creatures of God. I don't belong to anywhere else than Palestine. And I don't want to go to any place other than Palestine. My grandparents, when they were living in Jaffa in 1948, before they were expelled, I mean, they didn't know about the Bible. They were not born anywhere else. We are the original people of this land, and we do not know any place other than Palestine. And I was also disappointed, maybe I should not, that in the interview, Tucker was not did not ask him, what about the Palestinian people who are living there? I mean, are they foreign to the land? And how do we know if they were foreign to the land? We were not talked about as people who existed. It seemed like there was a land and there was a prophecy. And okay, let's apply this prophecy. And it's like an empty land. And let's just go back. It's like a project of return, as if nothing else existed on that land.
Last week, President Trump hosted heads of state and other officials from nearly 50 countries for the inaugural meeting of the so-called Board of Peace. He was in Washington, D.C. He vowed to provide $10 billion in U.S. funds to the organization. Congress has not approved this. Among other key proposals is to turn Gaza into an upscale seaside resort with gleaming skyscrapers and entirely new cities. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has also described this. The Pope has refused to join the Board of Peace. Israel has joined the Board of Peace, along with other countries. Your final thoughts on this?
I mean, I don't know whether to laugh or scream. I mean, I have at least two pieces of advice. First of all, instead of starting a board of something, you should start a board of justice. I mean, who is going to bring justice to this family? Shaban and Abu Shaban family, I mean, two parents and their children. The youngest was two years old, as you see. Who's going to bring justice to this family? And at least 4,000 children who were the only survivors of their families. And the second advice I have is that there's something that's called the United Nations. And that United Nations has, I mean, many, many resolutions that condemn Israel and its occupation, that is demanding that Israel end its occupation of Palestine. How about we adhere to the resolutions and the international law when it comes to the Palestinian people? And maybe third piece of advice, I mean, why would you have someone, a country, and someone who's accused? And it's a documented thing, but at least he's accused and he has a warrant, an arrest warrant, for committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. How come do you have him as member of that board of peace? So it is a joke, and I think it's an embarrassment for the coming generations to read what was happening. I mean, what happened in Gaza is a disaster. It's a genocide. But how, you know, how the international leaders have been acting, how they were responding. And I have a fourth piece of advice. Instead of raising money to rebuild Gaza, which is very good, I think it's very important to stop sending bombs that are killing our families in Gaza and reducing the Palestinian people and their homes and towns and houses to rubble.
And I wanted to get your final response to a DNC report that has not been released publicly, though it's called an autopsy report of the Democratic National Committee about the 2024 election. It concluded Kamala Harris lost significant support because of the Biden administration's policy on Gaza, according to a report in Axios. The DNC report still hasn't been released to the public. The Institute for Middle East Understanding, IMEU, is accusing the DNC of withholding the report, in part because of its findings on Israel. Your final comment on this? I mean, you lived in Gaza your whole life. You raised your family until 2023, but you're here in the United States since 24. So you're really aware of the politics of this country. And Kamala Harris's loss, of course, meaning President Trump won.
I mean, those who have stayed silent, I mean, it's not like the Democratic Party, you know, stayed silent, but I mean, it's not that they stayed silent, but I mean, they continue to justify Israel's war crimes. I mean, the videos and the stories of the people in Gaza who have been, you know, dismembered and who I mean, there are 10,000, I mean, at least 10,000 people who have been still remained under the rubble of their homes. And we don't hear anyone talking about, you know, recovering their bodies. That's one point I wanted to talk about. But I mean, there are videos of people, you know, burnt in their tents. There are videos of babies who were decapitated. These are not, you know, fairy tales. These are real videos and photos and witness accounts. And no one respected us, you know, to tell our stories like they were telling, you know, some hoped some fake stories from the Israelis on October 7th. So we didn't hear about any stories from the Democratic Party to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people, or to stop, you know, sending more and more bombs to the Israeli army, which they were using to carry out crimes against humanity. So I think it is a disgrace that this report is coming out now. I mean, it should have been very clear from day one that this is going to cause everyone a huge loss, but the hugest loss has been caused to us as Palestinians.
Masab Abu Toha, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Pulitzer Prize-winning Palestinian poet and author, awarded the 2025 Pulitzer Prize for essays published in The New Yorker. His latest poetry book is Forest of Noise. Coming up, the Winter Olympics have ended in Italy. We'll speak to Jules Boykoff, author of 6 books on the Olympics. Stay with us.
Said I couldn't do it, they told me that I would fail. They said that I was dreaming too big, wake up and smell. But the flowers around me, they all bloom so beautiful. Like a rose in the concrete, you are looking at a miracle. Coming up in the game, they want me to fall. But I studied the playbook, I'm ready to ball. I got a chip on my shoulder and my back's against the wall. That's when you really down bad, that's when you're showing that you're strong.
Cheers to the underdog.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. This announcement, I am so sorry to say that huge celebration we're going to have with over 2,000 people we were supposed to have tonight, February 23rd at the historic Riverside Church, has been canceled because of the blizzard we are in right now in New York City, what's being called a bomb cyclone. We are going to let people know through email and on our website at democracynow.org and on all social media when we plan to have this 30th anniversary celebration. We hope it will be in the next few weeks, and we'll keep everyone up to date. But in the meantime, we want to ensure that everyone remains safe. The Winter Olympics wrapped up on Sunday in Italy. At the Games, Norway set a new record by winning 41 medals, including 18 gold. On Sunday, the U.S. men's hockey team beat Canada. The men's team had an unexpected visitor in their locker room after the game, FBI Director Kash Patel. A reporter from ProPublica posted video from inside the locker room showing Patel chugging a beer and partying with the team. Patel, who's an avid hockey fan, had flown to Italy on a government plane, sparking widespread criticism. The FBI had claimed the purpose of Patel's trip was for official business. During the Olympics, there were multiple protests over the Trump administration's decision to send U.S. ICE agents to provide security for the U.S. delegation. We go now to Jules Boykoff, the author of 6 books on the Olympic, including Power Games, A Political History of the Olympics. His new piece for the Globe and Mail is titled, At the Olympics, Politics Has Always Come Before Sports. Boykoff played for the U.S. under-23 men's national soccer team between 1989 and 91. His forthcoming memoir is titled, Kickin', and he's speaking to us from Toronto. Jules, we talked to you at the beginning of the Olympics. There's so much to talk about. You say it's all about politics, even as President Trump said and J.D. Vance said, people should just play and not engage in politics. What struck you about these Olympics that took place in Italy?
Well, first off, Amy, the Trump administration has full-on politicized these Olympics. From the very beginning, when J.D. Vance showed up at the opening ceremony and was roundly booed and jeered by the audience, to him using the opportunity to be in Milan as essentially a campaign trip for 2028 election, to what you were just talking about, the remarkable moment of Kash Patel, flying to Milan on the taxpayer dime to watch a bunch of hockey games and then whoop it up with the United States hockey team in the locker room afterwards, chugging beers, slamming his hand on the table. But there's also President Donald Trump, who's politicized the games. After all, he punched down on Olympian Hunter Hess, who just was explaining in a pretty nuanced way how he felt like it was he had mixed feelings about participating in these Olympics at this particular moment. Trump called him a real loser, unleashing a torrent of hate at Mr. Hess, who said this was the most difficult period of his life.
You know,
so the Trump administration showed everybody.
I wanted to play Hunter in his own words, the 27-year-old USA freestyle skier, speaking at a news conference at the Olympics.
I think it brings up mixed emotions to represent the U.S. right now, I think. It's a little hard. There's obviously a lot going on that I'm not the biggest fan of, and I think a lot of people aren't. I think for me, it's more I'm representing my like friends and family back home, the people that represent it before me, all the things that I believe are good about the U.S. I just think if it aligns with my moral values, I feel like I'm representing it. Just because I'm wearing the flag doesn't mean I represent everything that's going on in the U.S. So yeah, I just kind of want to do it for my friends and my family and the people that support me getting here.
That's Hunter Hess. Jules Boykoff, continue.
Well, that's significant for a number of reasons. One, when President Trump took to Truth Social to slam Hunter Hess as a real loser, he also mangled that very nuanced message that you just played for us. In the process, he unleashed a torrent of hate. The MAGA army has come after Hunter Hess really hard. Second, I don't know how any of this fits with the Olympic spirit. I mean, I think it's not too much to say that President Trump wouldn't recognize the Olympic spirit if it came up and kissed him on the cankle. And third, the International Olympic Committee has been utterly silent when it comes to defending Mr. Hess. They just sat around and let him float in the wind. Fortunately, numerous Olympians from around the world spoke up in defense of Mr. Hess. You've got Eileen Gu, the great freestyle skier who represents China, who said that he absolutely has the right to speak out. So did Chloe Kim, the superstar snowboarder from the United States, who said the same thing. You've got a cross-country skier who even went as far as to say what Trump said was childish. And it's not just athletes who are defending Hess. Some of them actually gone on the attack. You've got Kelly Panik, who was a gold medal winner with the U.S. women's hockey team, who explained how she was proud to be from Minnesota, where people were taking to the streets to fight back against ICE, and that she drew inspiration from them. You've got another curler from Minnesota, a guy named Rich Ruohonen, who said, he's also a lawyer, and he said what's happening on the streets of Minnesota is disgusting and illegal, and there's no gray area about it. And so it's been a really interesting moment to have these athletes speaking out.
Jules,
and it's a tribute
to
the social movements on the streets.
I wanted to go to the U.S. figure skater Amber Glenn, the first openly LGBTQ plus athlete to compete in women's singles figure skating at the Winter Olympics.
It's been a hard time for the community overall under this administration. It isn't the first time that we've had to come together as a community and try and fight for our human rights. And now, especially, it's not just affecting the queer community, but many other communities. And I think that we are able to support each other in a way that we didn't have to before, and because of that, it's made us a lot stronger.
U.S. figure skater Amber Glenn, Jules.
God bless Amber Glenn. I mean, the courage that she has shown in the public sphere in the face of all this vitriol has been remarkable. And thank goodness for the U.S. figure skating team that brought so much joy to these Olympic Games, a joy that contrasts mightily with the hate that's spewing from MAGA land right now.
I also wanted to ask you about the Haitian athletes. Describe what happened to them and their uniforms.
Absolutely. So there were some athletes from Haiti that were participating in these Winter Olympics in Milano Cortina. And the designer of their uniforms put a nod to history on those uniforms. And it was the form of a figure of Toussaint Louverture, the revolutionary leader who got rid of slavery in Haiti and also started the first Black Republic in 1804. And the International Olympic Committee looked at that uniform and they said, oh, that's a breach of our rules around being political. And they forced the Haitian squad to scrub Toussaint Louverture off of their uniforms. And this points to the sort of selective morality that the International Olympic Committee has shown at these Olympics, whether it's doing that to Haitian athletes or forcing the bold Ukrainian skeleton athlete Vladislav Haraskevich to not participate because he wanted to wear a helmet of remembrance honoring those who died, his compatriots from Ukraine who died to Russia in the war.
And other people who were trying to bring up what was happening in their countries. I mean, you say the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, says it's neutral, but that simply means they side with power and put athletes in the crosshairs.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, Amy, I think it's important to take a moment to look at Vladislav Haraskevich, the skeleton Olympian from Ukraine, who basically sacrificed his ability to compete on the altar of his political beliefs. He showed up in Milan Cortina with a beautiful helmet of remembrance with the images of 24 athletes who'd been killed by Russia in war. The International Olympic Committee allowed him to wear that helmet in his practice runs. But when it came time to the actual competition, they said, no, you can't wear that. That's political. And he decided, Haraskevich, that he wasn't going to race. This is in sharp contrast with what the International Olympic Committee said to him in 2022, when after one of his runs, he held up a placard that said, no war in Ukraine. So at that point, the IOC in 2022 said, oh, that's fine, don't worry about it. But now, 4 years later, they dropped the hammer on him. And, you know, it's been remarkable to see them hide behind this idea of neutrality, as you mentioned. Neutrality, when you're talking about powerful people, neutrality tends to benefit the oppressors. Neutrality tends to benefit those who already have power. I'm confident that history will vindicate Mr. Haraskevich. He has shown the courage to remind us that sometimes the message is a lot more important than the medal.
Finally, pressure is mounting publicly and privately for the entertainment mogul Casey Wasserman to step down as chair of the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics following this series of salacious emails with Jeffrey Epstein associate Ghislaine Maxwell included in the Epstein files that were released by the Justice Department. Can you tell us what's happening there?
When Los Angeles was first handed the Olympics by the International Olympic Committee back in 2017, they were viewed as a safe pair of hands. But that safe pair of hands has absolutely fumbled the torch time and again. The incident that you're talking about is disgusting. It's an immoral obscenity, and it's led to the mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, to call for his resignation alongside around a third of the Los Angeles City Council. But that's not the first moral obscenity that Casey Wasserman has carried out in his official duties as running the LA Olympics. After all, as ICE ravaged Los Angeles and the military was called into Los Angeles, the LA 28 organizing committee sat totally silent, not a peep for them. Other sports administration groups around the city were speaking out, making statements, not LA 28. They sat totally quiet. There's also the fact that Casey Wasserman, back in August, when he attended a meeting with President Trump announcing the creation of a White House task force on the Olympics, was the first person to clap for President Trump when he went on a random anti-trans rant, perfectly willing to throw the trans community under the bus to maintain power and to keep Trump on his good side. Those are the moral obscenities that I'm very concerned about. And I hope that people think about as you consider moving toward these Olympic Games.
Jules Boykoff, I want to thank you so much for being with us, author of 6 books on the Olympics, including Power Games, A Political History of the Olympics. We'll link to your latest article at the Olympics. Politics has always come before sports. That does it for our show. Our Democracy Now! 30th anniversary celebration may be off tonight. It's not happening at Riverside Church, but it'll happen in the next weeks. Keep you posted at democracynow.org.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, Le Chablis.
Communication is everywhere, but what is it? Communication is how you share your thoughts, your opinions, your culture, from what you see on TV to what you post online. But what about the people who are not being seen or heard? AMI is a media company that strives to be a voice for Canadians with disabilities, whether it's through positive portrayal, reflection, and accessible media. AMI believes everyone should be included, and that includes you. AMI is inclusion. Experience AMI at amiplus.ca.